Today's episode is brought to you by Musical Theater Radio's merch store. Looking for that perfect gift for someone or just want to treat yourself to some great musical theater themed merch? Head to musicaltheaterradio.com and click on the All Things Theater button on the homepage and check out all the different designs available. And now, today's interview. Welcome back to another episode of Be Our Guest here on Musical Theater Radio. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Yovanoff. Today, we are heading across the pond to talk about British musicals and creators. The new book, Contemporary British Musicals, Out of Darkness, compiles a unique collection of essays which looks at multiple works of the 2010s and shines a light on their creative achievements and legacies, as well as analyzing the development and evolutions of the genre. Today, we have the book's co-author, Gus Gowland, to tell us more about the book and his career in musicals. Gus, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm very chuffed to be here.
Awesome. So before we get into all that stuff, we want to get to know who you are a little bit better. So I always ask my guests for a 30-second bio. So who is Gus in 30 seconds?
Okay, Gus is a musical theatre writer. I write book, music and lyrics, or various combinations of those. I'm from London, the UK. Originally, I live in York in the UK now. And alongside my writing career, I'm also an educator. So I teach in higher education establishments, teaching all things musical theatre. Basically, if there's musicals around, you'll find me nearby.
So were you always into musicals growing up, or is that something you discovered a little bit later in life?
Always. I don't know why. It's not a particular, you know, I'm not from a family that is into the arts specifically. I always wanted to be an actor, not specifically a musical theater actor. I just always wanted to perform, but I always sang and I loved musicals. I was writing musicals sort of lying on my living room floor when I was 14. That obviously never went anywhere, were never finished, but I've just always loved them. And then I set off down a path of being an actor and gradually started sort of being pulled more and more towards musical theatre, both as a performer but largely as a writer, and then realized that I wanted to make everything in my life about musicals. So then I studied for a PhD as well so that I could teach. So yeah.
I'm always curious, was there anything ever that you might have wanted to go into? You said you wanted to go and be an actor, but was there anything else you went, you know what, in a different path, a different life, I could have done this?
I briefly wanted to be a surgeon. I was very good at science when I was quite young, and my uncle was a surgeon, so I think it was like he seemed really cool and it seemed really exciting. So that's the only thing that I remember, like sort of actively thinking, oh, I'd like to do that. What's the path I have to do?
Yeah.
But that would have been like maybe 6 months or a year maximum where that was on my mind. If I had the skill, yeah, I would love to be an animator, like a Disney animator. Mm. I don't have the skill. That's in a dream world. apart from that, it's just been acting really and performing.
So like you said, you wanted to be an actor, but then you diverged into the musical theater and the writing. What was the impetus? What was that aha moment or was it just a gradual thing?
It was a gradual thing. But I trained at the Royal Scottish Conservatoire in Glasgow, and just did classical acting. So lots of Shakespeare and the like. But while I was there, I was writing bits of music and songs. We did an original musical for our final show, and I wrote two songs for that. I wrote some music for a play we did. So I'd sort of done it a bit, and just felt like, great, it's going to be a string to my bow as an actor. Once I was in the industry, and as many actors find, sort of not getting the opportunities that I wanted, I was like, oh, I need to do something. So I started making my own work, first through devising with some friends, and we devised a couple of shows that sort of toured Fringe, came over to Canada, did the Fringe circuit in Canada. I sadly didn't get to go with it. The budget didn't stretch that far. But sort of so started making work basically and thinking, oh, I'm enjoying this. And then there was one year where I co-devised and directed a one-woman show with a friend of mine. She was obviously the woman and I was the director and co-writer. And then I at the same in the same festival, I wrote and performed in a one-man musical, which I called Tell Me on a Thursday. That was basically just lots of stories of my up until that point, quite disastrous love and sex life, sort of punctuated with songs. And that was the thing that really made me go, oh, okay, like maybe writing musicals specifically is I have something, so let's go and explore that. So then I went back and did a master's degree in musical theatre writing, and that sort of really, yeah, focused the direction I was going in. Yeah.
And what would you consider your first true musical that you, after everything you've done?
I count Pieces of String, as which was a musical that I wrote for my grad show, actually, as my master's, as a half an hour long musical. And it got picked up by some developers, a company called Perfect Pitch in the UK, who have now morphed into Global Musicals, who have co-produced six. So they're doing pretty well. and so they picked up that show. That little half-hour show, and said we can see this as a two-act full-on show. And so I worked with them for years, and that was on in 2018 at the Mercury Theatre over here in the UK in Colchester, and that was sort of my first professional full-length show. I'd had lots of little things. I'd written some songs for a few things. I'd written a short play, but that sort of felt like the first big musical. That made me feel like, oh, I'm legitimate now.
So we could essentially say that Six would not have happened if your show had not have happened.
I mean,
in the broadest sense, we could say it.
I think it's more just that, like, maybe I'm somewhere at the family reunion. You'll see me in the back of the pictures, maybe. That's about as close as I think.
Now, let's move on to Mayflies, because we played on the station. That's kind of how we got to meet a little bit more. Tell us a little bit about that, because I think you said on your website it's the second show you consider.
Yeah, so Pieces of String happened in 2018. Pieces of String is still happening, by the way, in the way musicals are. We workshopped it last January, not the one just gone, 2023, a sort of revised version, and hopefully it's going to get some international productions soon. So that chugs along. But then my next show was Mayflies, which was produced by York Theatre Royal over here in the UK last spring. And it is very different from Piece of String, which was a sort of multi-generational love story. This is a love story of sorts, but it's a two-hander. And it uses the life cycle of a mayfly as a metaphor for a contemporary relationship. So we see this, there's sort of three time frames. There's this online relationship that lasts 2 years, where this couple meet, send messages, speak over the phone, communicate for 2 years. And then finally, they meet in person one night in a hotel, and we see the night that they meet, and then we see the morning after. And so those three time frames, we split and jump between the three. And it, yeah, it's very different. It's has a much more sort of poppy contemporary musical theatre score. And the main, I guess, unique thing about Mayflies is that it is, it's been written specifically to be performed by pretty much anybody. So by that, I mean, there's two characters. I haven't specified gender or age or sexuality or race or ability. There's pretty much whoever you've got, you can produce it. and that was amazing. It was such a challenge to write a score that would be flexible and malleable in that way. And so we wrote it so that the solos, there are two versions, different keys depending. And so you can pick which key suits you. but the duets only exist in one key. So I had to really think about where to write the voices so that whoever picked it up would be able to sing it and it would work. And actually, I think that was really interesting, particularly when we had a male actor, and it meant that he was singing in a sort of middle part of his range a lot more than we ever hear men singing now, because we always make them sing up in the rafters. And actually, it was really nice to hear that part of the voice. But we cast three actors for the original production, and we rotated them. So there were three different pairings that you could watch. Wow. Depending on which came you get. And some people came back and saw all three, which was amazing. And they were all completely different. The text was exactly the same. Score was exactly the same, but completely different. What was really interesting was that the audience's responses to the show was totally different as well, because depending on who they were watching, they had different ideas over who they thought maybe was to blame when someone had an argument, or who was the one that was more in love, and all of those things. And that's what I was really wanted to explore, because I was like, we watch everything with so many judgments, you know, we make snap judgments all the time. And I was like, what happens if I let the audience basically bring those to the table and really play on that? And so, yeah, you know, we had a woman who's in her 40s, a guy who was in his 30s, and a woman who's in her 20s. And so there's some stuff about having children in there, and that hits very different when it's an older woman to a younger woman, because of the assumptions we make. It was fascinating and really exciting, and I hope that it means that people will do it all the time, because it's very doable. It's one set, two characters, and anyone can do it.
What was the impetus for the show?
Well, I knew I wanted to write something really different from Pieces of String, to challenge myself. I knew I wanted to write something contemporary. And then I watched a documentary about rivers, because I really love rivers. And there was a section about mayflies on the Danube, I think. And I knew that mayflies had this sort of famous, they live and die in a day. And I knew that metaphor and that thing about them. But what I didn't know is that they had this sort of up to 2 years incubation period where they, before they hatch, which is part of their life cycle. I just thought they, you know, they had a day and that was it. So suddenly it made me think about, what is this 2 year incubation period? What is that when related to people? And that's when it made me think, an online relationship where things are growing and burgeoning, but also they're not quite. Yeah, everything's different when you're out in the open. So it's like they get to hide a little bit in their cocoon, because they're protected. So it was that really that then just the cogs started whirring. And it was one of those shows that arrived fairly fully formed in my brain. Like once I saw that documentary and had the idea, it sort of came quite quickly, because I was like, I've been in that situation. I've had those long online relationships, and I've also had those relationships that seem amazing, and then you meet them and instantly you're like, oh no, they walk funny. I can't marry this person. Yeah. Even though on the way there you were like, these 2 weeks of messages mean that we're going to be together forever. Like, it just felt very reachable, all of those emotions. So just, I put it all on the stage.
Congratulations on writing the show. And yeah, it, the accessibility makes such a difference that, you know, doesn't matter age, sex, genre, blah, any of that stuff. It's a very smart idea. And it opens up an opportunity for anyone, anywhere to do it. So
yeah, it's a great idea. And I think, thank you. And I've been working with some non-binary performers, some trans performers too, and I've sort of watched some of the challenges and the conversations that people are having about casting, and was just like, I want to write something that those performers can perform in as well, that doesn't feel like it is that they've got to mold themselves to fit into it, that actually, like, you know, the show, the characters are a coat and anyone can fit into the coat. It's like a one size fits all. But whoever wears it in their own way. Like, that's how I like to think of it. And so, yeah, so I was really conscious of that, of like making sure that I was writing something that really was accessible, and hopefully I achieved that.
Right. So between your first and your second show, there's obviously had to be growth, because that's, we're humans. We do that. What did you learn between your first and your second show that you discovered that you did differently, that you realized, oh, I'm doing this instead of that as a writer?
I learned, well, I got a PhD. So I learned that I don't like doing a PhD, and I was very glad to have got that done. I'm very glad, and I will put doctor as my title on everything I possibly can nowadays. But yeah, so I learned that. I actually, what I learned is that I can write really quickly. And I didn't know that about myself. I learned I can write quickly. And actually, it took Mayflies to really find the pattern of how I work. I think with Pieces of String, I was really figuring it out. Mm-hmm. You know, I wrote it, I'm still training. And so, and every version, because it was growing from this sort of 30-minute version, every version there was a new character, it was getting longer. And actually, Mayflies, I was able to begin that knowing what it was going to be, the whole size of it, the whole shape of it. And I wrote it really quickly. It was written in about 4 months. And I've since gone on to do other jobs and have written really quickly, and like, oh, I'm really, that's a really nice discovery, because Pieces of String took a long time, as musicals do, to happen. I tied that time in with my ability to get the work done. And then actually you go, oh no, like actually my work within that 7 years was 3 months of a year. And then everyone is doing their bit, which is the producing and the wrangling. But because I was new and I wasn't really doing lots of other things, I really felt like, oh, it's just, it's taken me this long to write the musical. And so Mayflies, writing that, really made me go, oh no, like it doesn't take me a long time to write. Like, you know, I'll be tweaking it for years and making it better, but like actually getting a show drafted, so at least I've got something to then really hone and improve, I can do that quickly. And that's satisfying. And I also learned a sort of a way of writing songs that I didn't have before, like a method that seems to really work for me. And I think it works because Mayflies was quite pop heavy. The show I've just written, Candidates, is very pop. And so it works for that structure. I think if I go and write something that's more of a chamber musical like Pieces of String, I wonder whether that I'll have to find a new way of working. But at the moment, I seem to have this little technique which works. So I'm grateful for that.
It's always interesting to look back at your earlier work. I find that with myself as well, because you look back, go, oh, what was I thinking? But then you look at it again and go, so raw and honest, and you don't know what you don't know, so you just do it. And it's this weird dichotomy of going, oh no, but oh yeah. Do you have that sometimes when you look back at your work and go, oh, definitely, what was I doing? But what was I doing?
Yeah, definitely. Like Pieces of String, there's so much. And I was just watching it this morning, watching the workshop we did last January, because I was making some notes and sort of getting myself back into the headspace of it. And there's some of it that I'm like, oh gosh, like I don't know that I would write that now because it's wrong, you yeah. know, or like, but actually it works really well and it is really honest. And it's that thing, isn't it? Of like, sometimes it's nice not to know what you don't know.
Yeah.
I always think that musically. So I'm self-taught as a pianist. I had about a year when I had lessons when I was like 30, when I was doing my MA. But up until then and after then, I've just fumbled through on my own. And so there's quite a lot, I think, although I can read and write music, I don't you know, I'm not hugely musicological and I don't have all of that theory really. And so I think I naturally do things in my melodies that are sometimes a little bit unusual. In fact, well, people have told me that they're difficult to sing or unusual, whereas I'm like, I naturally can make those leaps.
Yeah.
And I think if I had more, knowledge, then I might worry that it was wrong, quote unquote. So there's something to be said for sort of naivety and just what feels right.
Yeah, it's interesting you find that balance of knowledge and naivety, like you said. And sometimes some people work better with more knowledge and it just comes naturally. Mm-hmm. And some people, it's easier just to be a little bit naive and not know the mix of Mixalian scales and all, like all that theory. You're like, so yeah. let's talk about your book, Contemporary British Musicals Out of Darkness. How did that come about?
So I was at a conference, which is a musical theatre academic conference, which I was going as part of my PhD, and I was giving a paper there. And there were a couple of papers that were about British musicals that were very small shows, you know, that had short runs regionally or on the fringe. But the papers were really interesting. And I was like, these shows are really interesting, but they're like, there's a chance they'll just get forgotten, or the really exciting things that they're doing won't get acknowledged because they haven't had the wider impact. But actually they're worth giving time and attention to. And so that was the beginning. And I was like, there really isn't anything like that that looks at British musicals specifically and looks at the range of work that we do in the UK. And there's been such a shift since 2010 in the work that gets made here and the amount of musical theatre that gets made here. But because, so, you know, there's only a few shows that are like the big hitters. So I think some of those smaller shows don't get the credit they deserve. So that was the idea, really. And, you know, I met a publisher from Bloomsbury Methuen at the conference and was just chatting to him. And he was like, well, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Why don't you pitch it? And I was like, ugh. And he was amazing, Dom O'Hanlon. And he like guided me through. And I knew quite quickly that I wasn't wanting to do it on my own because that was a bit scary. And so I got a colleague on board, Claire Chandler, who is a brilliant academic and currently runs the University of Lincoln BA musical theatre course, which I ran previously. And so we did it together. We co-edited it. So and found it was an amazing experience. And we chose 2010 to 2020 essentially, and just looked at all the shows that had appeared in that time and then tried to figure out which ones we thought would be good. And we've got some of the biggies in there. Six is in there, Matilda's in there. But then there'll probably be shows that you may not have heard of, or if you have heard of, you might not have really know much about. And what we wanted to do as well is make sure that we chose shows that had some material in the world. So they all have either a cast recording or a pro shot, or the libretto is available, so that if people are excited by them, they can go and find out more, that they're not sort of stuck and gone, well, this is great. You told me about the show, but now what now? So like, yeah.
Tell us about some of the shows that, and this is more me. We know Six, we know Matilda. Some of the other shows that we might not know about. I'm always curious about those.
Yeah. Well, there's a show called The Assassination of Katie Hopkins. Katie Hopkins is a very controversial figure, a real person in the UK, who's a sort of bit of a right-wing person. This was like a hypothetical verbatim show, so sort of faux verbatim, written as though it were verbatim, as though this person had been assassinated and what that meant for people and how they reacted to it, and where, you know, and it sort of looks at the idea of how we martyr people and how information is relayed. There's lots of sort of faux text messages. It's just a really interesting concept and a really interesting structure. And that ran for 2 weeks in Wales at Theatre Clwyd, and I think it's had one more little run at MT Fest. But apart from that, sort of hasn't had a bigger run, but like was doing incredibly exciting things, not only looking at how we deal with these sorts of, you know, right wing people and how that affects people, some people for, some people against, and how that can be the sort of striking of a match for all other things happening, you know, between families and communities. But also this faux verbatim style, which was so interesting that, like, at a glance, you would think it was like something like London Road, which was all, you know, actually verbatim. But it was all the brilliant work of Chris Bush. So that's one that for me, I was really keen to get in there. There's also two writers that that when I first started writing musicals were like the people that were doing it in the UK. There was Dougal Irvin and there was Craig Adams, and they're both brilliant writers. And they both made me, you know, they're the people that made it possible for me, because I could see that, oh, you can be British and write musicals and make really interesting work. And so I'm really pleased that we got both of those. And we've got Departure Lounge, which is the first musical we look at, which is by Dougal Irvin, and is about a group of lads, British lads, going on a holiday. It feels very, very, very British. There's a cast recording out there. It's worth listening to. And it was sort of very guitar-led, very sort of Britpop, which we hadn't seen in musicals over here, using that quite British sort of 90s, early 2000s pop music sound. So that was great. And then also we looked at Lift, which is by Craig Adams, which there is a pro shot of. Mm-hmm. Starring Cynthia Erivo pre Color Purple, pre Tony's, Academy Awards, pre becoming a superstar. But that's a really fascinating show that takes place in the 54 seconds that the lift in Covent Garden tube station takes to get from the street to the platform. And it's just really brilliant and interesting, and Craig Adams is a fantastic writer. So those are two shows that I was really glad that we were able to give some space to.
What makes a British musical British, do you think? Because, you know, we're inundated with Broadway and American musicals. And honestly, here as a Canadian, I'm going to speak for all Canadians just because I can. We look at Broadway because it's so close and we're inundated, but I look at the West End in the UK on the same parallel, the same level, as that's what we try to achieve and strive to. What is a British musical, do you think, and the comparison, and what do you think makes a difference?
Well, what is a British musical is a really interesting question, and one we spent the whole time making the book trying to answer, and I don't know that we ever did. We asked all of, because alongside every chapter in the book, we then, Claire and I then interviewed someone attached to the production, and we would always ask them, you know, what is your favorite British musical? What do you think a British musical is? And there were quite a lot of disagreements, and fundamentally, I think it's about sort of where the show originates, where the money is from, where the creatives are from. It's why I guess you could say that Matilda is a British musical, even though Tim Minchin is not British, but it's based on a sort of quintessential British novel. It was made by the RSC. There's sort of those logistical arguments, but I think there's a much sort of deeper answer that I don't fully have formed, but there's something about the content of British musicals that I think is quite community focused. A lot of British musicals have sort of some sort of collective to them in a way, I think. But yeah, we're still trying to find the answer definitively.
Is there a show that you would say is that, in your opinion, this is a British musical? Because for me, it's like, for America, Hamilton is an American musical. Like, it just reflects its personality. Come From Away, that is a Canadian musical. That reflects our personality. What show reflects the British personality, do you think, in your opinion?
That's so tough. Yeah. Probably something like Billy Elliot has that sense of community, that sense of place, that, you know, the Northeast. So I feel like maybe that. I mean, I was going to say Les Mis, but that's because that is, to me, a British musical, even though it originated in France, obviously, is written by French people. But the version that we all know, it is, to my mind, a British musical. But yeah, maybe Billy Elliot is sort of the biggest British musical. That and Oliver, I guess.
True. They always say that musical theater is an American, blah, blah, all that stuff. I always considered Gilbert and Sullivan much more musical theater in the beginning. I know it's operetta, but you guys, I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to say you guys are the ones who created it and started it. Like, that's the birth.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. It sort of is the quintessential American art form. And I think in Britain, we have such a chip on our shoulder about that. I've noticed it recently. There's a great show on at the moment called Standing at the Sky's Edge, which is a British musical written by a book by Chris Bush, who wrote The Assassination of Katie Hopkins. And it's a jukebox show. So the songs are from a singer-songwriter called Richard Hawley, who's a very brilliant singer-songwriter. And it feels to me that I've completely lost my train of thought.
That's okay. I do that all the time.
Got excited about Standing at the Sky's Edge and lost my train of thought. Oh, yes, that was it. Chip on our shoulders. But I walked past a big poster for it the other day, and it said, it was a quote from a newspaper that said, the best British musical in decades. And I was really struck by that, because I was like, we do that all the time over here. It's always the best British, which immediately, I know that there's a thing about claiming it, being like, look, this is ours. But also to me, it somehow immediately goes, but we're not comparing it to the Americans, because they're going to automatically be better. You know, it's not the best it's not the best musical in decades. You know, it doesn't have the confidence to say that. And there's something inherent about the way that we speak about our own musical theatre work that I think still is a little bit subservient to the US. And, you know, and like, they are the, you know, the masters of the form. But like, what I hope this book does is say, actually, like, we're pretty good at it too. And it's different. And it's like, maybe there's less money involved and it's less flashy and the stories are slightly different, but like, we're doing really interesting things theatrically that are worth investigating.
So now I know genetically as a country where we get our self-deprecation from and our inferiority complex. It's like, yeah, we're good, but you know, we got that. So I'm going to blame you guys for giving
us
that.
Well, we can be blamed for most things, to be honest.
Oh, man. So congratulations on the book. It's fantastic. I think everybody should definitely take a look at it. Not only, even if you're not in the UK, because discovering new musicals, that's the way to do it. And as I think we talked off air, I'm all about promoting new works and some of the stuff that you just spoke about, I didn't know. And therein lies the problem about that ocean of literal ocean between us that I don't get to discover these new shows. I hear a lot of obviously coming from north, south to north, but east, west, it's difficult. So I think people should definitely check out the book to learn and just discover.
Definitely. And like I said, not only have we got a chapter, 10 chapters, each focusing on a different musical, and they're sort of written by some great academics and have really good, interesting perspectives on the shows. But as I said, each chapter is accompanied by an interview with someone involved in the production. And we've really spread who we spoke to. I was like, I don't want to just speak to writers and I don't want to just speak to actors. So we speak to designers, choreographers, we speak to the digital marketing guy who worked on Six, which obviously like that whole show, the way that it was marketed digitally through TikTok was such a huge part of how that show got its momentum. So I think though, you know, you've got the more academic chapters, but the interviews that accompany them are really accessible because they're just conversations like this with people asking them about their careers and also their work specifically on these shows. So yeah, it's worth, you know, whether you look at the detailed academic work or whether you're just like, actually, I really want to know what that choreographer did on that show. You know, we speak to Ellen Kane, who was assistant choreographer on Matilda, but then went on to choreograph the movie of Matilda. Yeah, so they're fascinating chats. So everybody should read it.
Well, how do people get a hold of it? And how do they get to know a little bit more about you? The socials, the websites, and all that fun stuff.
Well, the book is available sort of everywhere. You can go to Bloomsbury Methuen's website to buy it direct from them. But all good bookstores, you should be able to buy it or order it if they don't have it in stock. But if you're a student, then petition your college library to make sure they get some copies in. And we've got some... I made a playlist which is out there so that you can listen to some of the tracks, although I'm pretty sure they'll all be playing on the radio, so just listen, tune into the radio and you'll hear all these songs. And then for me, I've got a website which is just my name, gusgowland.com, or I'm on Twitter, just my name, Gus Gowland. I'm, as far as I know, I'm the only Gus Gowland there is. So if you search for me on socials, you will find me.
Nice. Do you have anything in the pipeline that you want to promote?
No, I don't. I've just finished a show. I just did a new show down at a drama school just outside London, which was called Candidates, which is a modern retelling of Much Ado About Nothing. It's basically Much Ado About Nothing meets Mean Girls. That's the elevator pitch. Super fun, super poppy, super silly. And we just did that at the end of last week. So I'm currently in my, like, I'm just acclimatizing, readjusting to real life and figuring out what comes next, essentially.
Well, we'll all have to watch for that and listen for that. And if next time, just let me know. We'll help promote the heck out of it if you got anything coming up
Thank you
future.
So much.
Awesome. Now, one more question before we go. You said you liked rivers. Do you have a favorite river? Is there one that, you know, you wish you could visit or you have visited and it's most beautiful, it's most whatever?
I mean, the Thames, being a Londoner, like the Thames is like, I feel like I have the Thames running through my veins. It's like, it's that has my heart. But actually, I went to a friend's wedding in upstate New York a couple of years ago. And we were like in the corner of New York State and Pennsylvania and the Delaware River. And it was like astonishing because obviously everything in America is just so much bigger than it needs to be. Yeah. So it was just like, yeah, it was beautiful and enormous. And I'd like to go back and like explore that. That's my dream, is to like do like a whole river. I've never done that. And like, yeah, somewhere.
We got some nice rivers here in Canada. You can come and visit us.
Oh, yeah, please. So, get me to Canada.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Gus, thank you again for coming on today. Congratulations on the all the musicals, the book, and anything in the future. All the best to you.
Thank you so much. I've loved it.
Wonderful. All right. We were just speaking with Gus Gowan, creator of many musicals, including Mayflies, and of course, co-author of the book Contemporary British Musicals Out of Darkness. Tune in next week as we'll speak with another guest or guests about their life, love, and passion. That is musical theater. I am your host, as always, Jean-Paul Jovanoff. And until next time, I'll see you when I see you.